Today's program is brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit culinarycenter.com.
This is Chef Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte, and in the studio today, I've got some old friends and some new friends, and they brought whiskey, so they're the best kinds of friends. Welcome back to The Speakeasy. This week, we are, you know, we're moving into the fall and winter. Clearly today, it's kind of something, a little bit of both here in Brooklyn, but
it's warm out, man.
It's kind of balmy, but it's still, in my opinion, the best season to be drinking some whiskey, especially American whiskey. And we have Aviana Ponzi from Baumburger's Distillery in Pennsylvania, Lancaster, and my good old buddy Justin Lane Briggs. Welcome back, and welcome for the first time.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
So excited to be here on this balmy day.
I am too. better here than, you know, anywhere else, in my opinion, right now, because we are hanging out with some friends, and we're going to be talking whiskey. And this is a fairly new product to me and to a lot of people, so why don't you give me the rundown on what we've got here?
Sure. It's actually very new. We just bottled 3 weeks ago. Baumburger's is new and old kind of together, as Baumburger's is and was the oldest operating distillery in the country. You may know it better as what was Michter's in Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. only Michter's for about 20 years and Baumburger's for about 150 years. So we are trying to resurrect that brand and keep Pennsylvania whiskey in Pennsylvania.
It's cool. It's actually, you know, that's where a lot of the Whiskey Rebellion happened back in the day. And
certainly did. Yes, the our master distiller is Dick Stoll, who created and distilled the famed Age Hirsch Bourbon, was trained by Everett Beam, and the Beams were actually Bohms from Lancaster County that didn't move down south until after the Whiskey Rebellion for obvious reasons.
I think, you know, there's definitely like a super rich history there. With you know, especially rye whiskey, but I mean,
of course,
that's you're starting the limestone belt up there and kind of
exactly.
going down into Kentucky, so it's a great place to make some whiskey. So yeah, so we're resurrecting the brand, and tell me a little bit about like the process.
All started over 2 years ago, where my husband was delving into genealogy, and we're restaurant people, spirits people, and the two sort of came together. We're like, wow, there's this rich history in Pennsylvania. And my husband grew up in the shadow of Michter's, which is only 5 miles away from his hometown in Lititz. And we're just wondering why nobody was doing anything with it and why it had sort of been stolen and taken down to Kentucky. And through
Michael Skernick Spirits.
Yes. Through Michael Skernick Spirits has helped us distribute it in New York, and we're so, so excited to bring this brand back to once what it was. 150 years, starting in the 1700s. My husband, after we started this whole process about 2 years ago, realized that he's actually related to the Baumburger's, which was a hair-raising experience. And we had a local historian connect us with Dick Stoll and Elaine, who's his wife, and he was a distiller there at Michter's for 30 years, distilling all the Michter's products, Age Hirsch bourbon, a wild turkey rye, and many other greats, and was just sort of slipped into obscurity, and we pulled him out, and hopefully he's going to get his due now.
Wow. His story is pretty amazing. I don't think I've asked you this before. This is Justin, by the way. I don't think I've asked you before as we... Not that my voice sounds anything like Damon's, but... I don't think I've asked you before as we've been talking about this. State the distillery itself, the Baumburger's distillery, when you guys kind of started reinvestigating that history, like what did it look like when you guys first went and visited and saw. You talk about Eric growing up in the shadow of that kind of industrial history, but
right. So I in the late 80s, Michter's got run into the ground and was sort of left in disrepair, and has been that way, you know, since that time. The Bombergers building, which is the original building, which basically kind of looks like a barn, less like a factory and a plant, which is sort of what the Michters grew up around that building. That's the building that's on the National Registry of Historic Places. Oh, cool. Since pre-Prohibition time. It only closed during Prohibition and then was reopened as many other things. That's the only thing that stands now. It's and also like a small warehouse, but everything else has gone. There was nobody preserved it, so it just sort of went by the wayside, unfortunately. Mm. So
like
it's only
so many
to, yeah, exactly. Yeah, so many only
things.
Recently have people started taking an interest in it, and you know, we're setting up a non-for-profit to try to save that building and keep it going.
Do you guys have plans to like build a museum or any sort of like a way for people to kind of engage with the history that exists?
Yeah, our plan
there
is to have a museum there and a tasting room, and possibly maybe distill on site or close to it. We're trying to figure that out right now, but we have some good friends who own the property and are on our side, and so we're super psyched.
That's great. You know, there's so much heritage and history that gets lost. Well, especially because of Prohibition. You know,
yes, sort of canceled out everything.
Yeah, it kind of ruined a lot of stuff. I mean, thanks, Scary Nation. that's great. It's one thing I like about like the new craft distillery like movement, if you will,
yeah.
And research is that there's not only a desire to preserve the spirits of the past and recent past, really, and that heritage, but also it's not just the juice, it's also the process, it's the actual structures, you know, like it's great when I love driving through Pennsylvania, especially like, you know, when you're on a motorcycle and you're just out there and like you see all the barns with the big stars on them and stuff
like
that.
Yeah, and that's what I was just telling Justin. I'm like, oh yeah, it's horse and buggies and farms, and it's that every day. We're hoping also to grow some grain on the same property, because I guess back in the day they did grow rye for Bombergers and Michter's just
right there,
a stone's throw away on site from the property. So that would just be amazing.
Especially, you know, when you have like field to bottle, as it were, you know, like you can do it all on site. And
yeah, estate distillation doesn't really exist very much here in the States. I mean, well, we have Hill Rock, and is there anybody else? I can't think of a single one.
It's skipping my mind right now.
Yeah,
no, it's tough. I mean, it's difficult to do as well, which is probably why not a lot of people are not doing it. It's difficult enough to find people who actually have experience in distilling in the craft industry, let alone then you're adding, you know, farming, malting. It's just a lot going on. Marketing.
So many skills.
Many skills, so little time.
I know. I've been threatening to just like leave New York City and go back to Oklahoma to my farm and put a still there, because like we already grow wheat and corn, so it's like might as well just
do it.
I would miss New York, though.
You'll get to a point where you'll be okay with that.
Yeah.
As a native New Yorker who left.
Yeah.
You'll get to a point where you'll be like, I can just come back and visit. It's okay.
Well, you were telling me before the show that you actually grew up here and actually just blocks away from where I live now.
Yes, I am a native, born and raised New Yorker. Grew up in Borum Hill on Pacific Street between Hoyt and Bond, and still have a house in Carroll Gardens, which for the first couple of years of living in Pennsylvania, I definitely cried for. But I'm starting to appreciate the farmland, and just and also being a foodie, just the embarrassment of riches that are in Lancaster County is
sure.
is really fun to work with.
Really heavy. I mean, like that's
It's some serious, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel that way when I go home to visit Vermont also. So,
yeah, I mean, Lancaster County is the largest non-irrigated farmland in the United States.
That's crazy.
And then obviously they've been here since my husband Eric's people have been here since late 1600s. Just,
yeah. Before we were...
I know. And I'm Italian from New York, so for me, it's like, why are you guys so into genealogy? Oh, because you've been here a long time. I've only been here for about 5 seconds, so it's not as appealing for us.
Yeah, but, you know, that's... I think it's great that you have a place here and a place there, you know, so you can actually bounce back and forth.
Yeah, it's nice.
It's nice to be in the city and also be able to get out of it. That escape is nice. And it's only a few hours away, really.
Yeah, it's about 2.5 hours away, not too far.
Yeah. I mean, do you ever... to me, if I were in that situation, I would probably be, like, hustling back and forth, like, all right, man, you know, like... Let's, you know, like, go to the farmer's market there, you know, here, and then, like, kind of figure out what's going on, and then kind of, like, bounce back and forth, and, like, because it's, like, that's one of the things I like about New York City, is that for being so, like, such a city, is that people are striving so hard to connect to the country life, you know?
Well, I think more so than... As a New Yorker, more so than the people who live in the country, because they take it for granted.
Exactly.
Where you're in New York, you're like, oh, it's farmers markets. It's the obsession is much more because you're surrounded by concrete.
Yeah.
And I think just now people in Lancaster are really starting to appreciate those deep agrarian roots because they sort of like, ooh, farming, ugh.
That's totally true.
So it's just such a wild, survive, like, yeah. a dichotomy of we're here, we're all about it, and we think farmers are great. And they're like, eh.
They're like, yeah, well, why don't you come out here and do it?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there's...
It's hard work.
I remember, like, probably about 5 years ago, I was at work and... it was at Frankie's, and there were...
My neighborhood restaurant.
Yeah, your neighborhood. our neighborhood. Yeah. And there were a few girls who were working at Frankie's, and these three different girls were talking about moving out to the country, moving to all separately different, like, farms, going out to work on, like, a cheese farm and this farm and that farm. And I was like, oh, man. And I almost, like, talked them out of it. You know, I was like, well, you don't.
I would have had the same. I'm like, what are you talking about? But you just have to let them.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I grew up on a farm, so like, and that's like, you know, changing plow sweeps for, you know, 10 cents a sweep.
It's not glamorous.
It's not good, you know. But at the same time, there's something to be said about the process and like the respect and appreciation for
agreed.
Someone's doing this. Someone has to do this for this to happen. Right. You know, to get the grain to make the whiskey to. I cut the staves to make the barrels. You know, there's so much more involved than just people glamorize craft spirits, right. especially and like fancy foods and restaurants. But like, there's a lot that goes into it.
There really is. I think people do glamorize distilling in general, where it is somewhat of a manufacturing process. It's not, I mean, the liquor end and the spirit end of it at sort of the end consumer is glamorous, but certainly the minding the stills as things drip out like one tiny thing is not quite as glamorous as I think people think.
Maybe sit on the porch with a shotgun.
I mean, realistically, you know, much like growing vegetables isn't as glamorous as we might imagine, you know, like being, you know, kind of touching it from a such a removed perspective here in the city. But like, you know, I think similarly, like, you know, growing up on farms in Vermont and around that community, I took it for granted, and I always didn't really connect with what that meant until I moved here and then started looking at, I think we talked about this last time, looking at mm-hmm. spirits as an agricultural product too, and then kind of drawing those lines backwards again. You know?
That's exactly what it is. And people are like, oh, well, why does Pennsylvania have such a deep distilling roots? I'm like, well, because they were farmers and there was no currency. This was prior to any currency in the United States. So if you had grain, you had fruit. How were you going to transport it? It was going to go bad. So you had to distill it. It was really just an easy way to hold on to capital, basically.
And it's kind of a more fun way to enjoy
certainly
it.
It's more fun to imbibe. Yeah,
totally. And it's amazing that so many of our like kind of go to, especially in terms of like the resurgence of rye and things like that, go to kind of spirits within, you know, within the American whiskey category are influenced by or are nodding at, referencing maybe the Pennsylvania history of distillation. But you know, I know my go-to rye is, you know, a lot of the times when I'm making cocktails is named for a square in Philadelphia, but certainly hasn't been in Pennsylvania for a long time.
Sure,
certainly true.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. This it's kind of funny the way I think it's very interesting. You know, like we were saying. I mean, like, growing up in Oklahoma, there was... I tried hard, really hard, and I kind of succeeded for a little while to stop saying y'all. And then when I moved to New York City...
It's a style... That's...
It came back real hard,
well,
man.
Because that's... You're differentiating yourself, which I think is always a good thing, where it's like, everyone was saying y'all then, you were trying not to be that, where in New York, you're like, oh, no, I'm from there.
That's why I don't get rid of my Vermont... driver's license or my Vermont license plates, you know? Come on, let's keep this.
Well, okay, so speaking of differentiating, let's take a quick break, and when we get back, let's try some of this whiskey and talk about what makes it different from the rest out on the market. Be back in just a moment with Baumberger's Whiskey.
International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
All right, we are back. You're listening to The Speakeasy, and in the studio today, we have my good old buddy, Justin Lane Briggs, and my new friend, Aviana Ponzi, from Baumberger's Whiskey Distillery in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. We just poured some drams right now, so we're going to check it out. We were talking about the show, like, differentiating, and what's one of the things? I know you guys have been kind of blowing up onto the scene very quickly. First of all, I love the packaging.
Thank you.
It's a really cool bottle, and it actually looks like it's from the early 1700s.
Yeah, that's sort of what we were going for. We wanted a nod to the past, but still looking somewhat modern as well.
It's like a giant flask. I need bigger boots.
Exactly. We're definitely all about the flask.
It does fit in your hand pretty well. Yeah. Like all good bottles.
That was another criteria as well. Yeah.
I mean, I think from my angle on the distribution end of it right now, one of the things that I think has catalyzed that explosion of interest in it and that conversation piece is exactly in both the heritage that we were just talking about, you know, that kind of rooting in tradition, and then specifically the embodiment of that tradition in Dick Stoll, who we could talk a little bit more about.
Dick Stoll is really one of the last great American distillers who is not working for a huge company at this point. He was the distiller of H. Hirsch Bourbon, which I think many people think is a Southern Kentucky product. It's the best bourbon you'll never taste, as Chuck Cowdery wrote a book about it from Whiskey Advocate. And I think everyone thinks that it's from somewhere else, but it's from Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And he distilled that in 1974 and hasn't really distilled anything since the closing of Michter's and since that whole craziness with H. Hirsch Bourbon has recently come out, $1,600 a bottle. Every whiskey nerd on the face of the earth is trying to get their hands on it. And he was just of the greatest generation type of guy, goes out hunting and fishing at age 80. And just when you ask him about it, he's like, oh, well, what was different? How'd you distill it? He's like, well, that's just what we did at the plant every day. And that's just the type of man that he is. Yeah. He's just like, he's the real deal, was trained under Everett Beam. He was first sent after the Korean War to dig ditches. The ditches that he happened to be digging were ditches at Michter's, which they were building some new buildings. And he was the only one out of like 100 guys who was tapped to come and actually work at the distillery. He worked his way up as like the head of maintenance. And then Everett Beam said, hey, you know what you're doing. How would you like to become the distiller here? And then was the master distiller for 30 years.
Wow. That's such a cool, like, I love that, man. Cause like we have clearly a lot of bartenders on the show. So it reminds me of, kind of that story, you know, like where, you know, the bartender starts out as like a dishwasher in a place.
It is.
And then like works their way through the ranks.
Well, it's a true American story. And yeah. I think in a day and age where a lot of, spirit brands are fabricating it, it's like a real story. Just a real historical story that we felt needed to be told.
Yeah.
But, you know, what's in the bottle now is being told with transparency too, which is pretty right on. So what's the blend that he's putting together?
So to bridge the gap for us of trying to build our distillery and bring this out into the market, we've created a blend, which Dick has done the blend for. So our good friends up at Finger Lakes Distilling, Thomas McKenzie, who is a big Dick Stoll fan and is anxious for him to get his due, gave us some really great 3.5-year-old rye. And the bourbon is a 2.5-year-old from LDI.
Cool. Yeah, so it's like 89
bourbon. 89-11.
Yeah, cool.
And the rye is a little bit different than his usual age and mash bill that you might see on the shelves for Mackenzie rye.
Cool.
Yeah, it comes through in a big way. I mean,
it really does.
Do you want to take a sip?
Yeah, let's take a sip.
We should drink some.
Radio silence.
bad news.
Don't worry, yeah. Jack. We're going to pour you a glass.
The rye rides so like clearly for such a low percentage of Mackenzie rye specifically.
It's amazing.
Yeah, there's a lot of character there. There's a lot of spice.
Yeah, I mean, so brings up another question. Do you, and this is totally like any single person's opinion, but how do you like to drink your whiskey? Do you like to drink it neat, or do you like rocks, or do you like to mix it in cocktails? I mean, like, what's your typical go-to?
I'm usually a neat rocks person. I never drank whiskey in cocktails. Sort of a recent development of everyone being obsessed with cocktails, I was drinking whiskey a bit before that.
Yeah.
So there weren't too many options. You were drinking it neat, so I sort of have kept...
Yeah.
And I love the taste of it, so... I mean, and I do enjoy cocktails, but I just do prefer it either neat
yeah.
or maybe with a cube or two.
A lot of people get uppity, you know, when it comes to mixing craft whiskeys and cocktails because they're like, all right, well, we worked really hard on this.
I love it. I think it's fantastic.
I think it is, too.
Yeah. If somebody wants to mix me a cocktail, I'm all about it. It's just when I first started, when I was younger, sort of switching from clear spirits over to brown spirits, you were just, that's how you were drinking them.
Well, and this one's so smooth. I mean, it's like, it's actually kind of, the rye is there, but it's like, it's kind of delicate, you know?
Mm. Well, you get kind of that sweetness up front with the bourbon, and then you get sort of a rye finish. Gives it a nice, like... what I would say in like food, like a middle and a backbone that's something that you're like, what is that?
Oh man, this makes me want to like, just want to sit on a porch swing with this, like we're drinking out of mason jars. How Brooklyn is that?
Yeah.
Of course, but
how Pennsylvania is that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's true.
I think that was where Brooklyn got it from.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, this is great. And I'm really
glad
that you brought it on the show today. Cause like I've been hearing so much about it lately and I'm really psyched. I've been actually reading about it. You guys, I've gotten quite a bit of press.
And we're really operating on a shoestring budget as sort of a labor of love. So just people who are really into whiskey have been taking note of it just because of the lineage and because of Dick Stoll's just amazing past.
What's your perfect whiskey moment in your opinion, in your mind? What's your setting for that?
It's funny because it's sort of a dichotomy and a duality of a bar urban whiskey moment and now a new sort of country whiskey moment that was never in my lexicon before. And it's taken place actually while we were bottling. Every time we bottle, we pull out the A.H. Hirsch and everyone has a tiny little nip, just because it's a
stretch it out.
Yeah, you got to stretch it out.
That kind of means we make should go down to a bottling.
A little mark on the bottle. A little mark on the bottle.
And mark with a date.
And the date. And yeah, that's the Bombergers. That's what we do now.
Cool. I love that. You know, that's, you know, going back to the farm thing is like, I remember, you know, our big thing was like when we were working on the farm was, you know, brewing sun tea in the big jar.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just put it on the back porch and you'd go out.
My mom was from out west and used to do the same.
I still do that in Brooklyn.
Yeah. But it was great because like by the time you like went out and like it was maybe like time for lunch break, you come back and the tea was brewed by the sun, you know, it was great. And then like, I just remember like throwing a bunch of ice in it and just downing it. And now it's like become an obsession with me. I'm obsessed with iced tea. It's crazy. If you follow my Twitter, it's all I talk about.
Well, then you should try something called Meadow Tea.
Yeah.
It is, I don't know if it's in other places, but it's a very Pennsylvania Dutchy beverage.
I've had it.
Have you had it?
Yeah.
Well, they pick wild mint and then do it in the a la sun tea.
Yeah.
It's delicious.
So good. Yeah, this is like I said before, it's like I want to be on a porch swing hanging out with this. It's like... There are different opinions on proof as far as whiskeys go, and this being at 86 is really
interesting that
cool.
You mentioned that, and I've had a lot of discussion from whiskey nerds and why is it at 86 proof and it should be higher, should be 90s, should be, and Dick insisted on it being at 86 proof. That was his harken back to his old sweet spot. Yeah. When he was at Michter's.
It's very awesome. I mean, as far as actual longevity with hanging around drinking it,
it helps.
It definitely helps. And it kind of sucks. I don't want to sit around and have one glass of whiskey. Maybe that's just me being terrible. But I would like to have multiples, and that definitely helps.
I hear you.
You know? I don't want the party to stop too soon, I guess. There's a lot of life and love to be experienced, and it's good to be able to, hang out with a whiskey for a while.
And take your time.
That's why session beers are great, too, you know?
Totally. Exactly. Totally.
Have a session beer and
how many? I mean, how many 9% can you have at a certain point?
Seriously.
And I can't. I mean, for me anymore, it's like I'm one. And
how many 127 proof?
No, I can't even have half, and then I'm asleep. So. Yeah.
Well, this is great. I'm really excited to finally get to try this. And it's a great whiskey. I'm really into it.
Cheers.
And
it's got a lot of
a lot going on for kind of like a blend of some younger whiskeys.
Yeah, I mean, it drinks a lot older than it is.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, cool. Well, what do you give us the rundown on your contacts, your website? What is the website? So,
you can find us at BombergersDistillery.com or on Facebook, Twitter. Please reach out to us and help us preserve Pennsylvania whiskey.
Yeah, it's great. I'm really psyched for you guys.
Thank you. It's been a long time coming.
Yeah, and it's been awesome having you on the show, Aviana.
My pleasure.
It's great because I know that I'm going to see you a lot because you're bi-coastal.
Yes, I am. Farm and city.
Farm and city.
Yeah.
And Justin, thanks for coming back on the show.
Always a pleasure.
And bringing me a new friend.
my pleasure entirely.
Awesome. Well, cheers. Thanks, guys, so much. And
that's it
for the Speakeasy this week. Check in to heritageradionetwork.org for many more like this. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.